are going to, in a very humble and very feeble way, here at the start of the lesson, I'm going to try to exalt God as high as I possibly can without, it's difficult. The lesson that I actually had titled was God is Big. And I kept thinking that's true. And then I thought again, let's say God is great and powerful. And to try to get that point across in our mind in the very deep way, I'm going to try to do that in this manner. This is a picture from the Hubble telescope of deep space. God is somewhere in a realm that we don't know. He is a spirit. We've come this morning to worship Him in spirit and in truth. The farther out we look into space, the more we realize just how large the universe is that we live in. And so this is just staring off into one direction as the telescope is taking a picture of deep space. And Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, it very plainly declares that God created the heavens and the earth. So that being true, God has created everything that we look around and everything that we see. And to think about how vast the universe is, it makes us feel pretty small. And then we just shift over to our solar system, and we have a picture of our sun that NASA has taken. And we have this being 92.96 million miles away from the Earth. And I trust that the mathematicians have gotten that somewhere in the realm of where we're at. That's a long way away. But we see the sun rise and the sun set each and every day as God controls that. How can we then realize how big God is, how great God is, how powerful God is, when we recognize that He Himself is the one that created that sun? And then we just kind of come over here, and because we can't take a picture of our solar system. This is designed on a computer. This is not an actual picture, because we just don't have any way to take a picture of what takes place in our solar system as we see planets come in and out of view through the telescope. And you see Earth there, the third planet from the sun. And this is just a picture of our solar system. And yet we're still not in the realm that you and I see each and every day. And then we come a little closer, went the wrong direction, and we zoom in to a picture of the Earth from the moon, from Apollo 11 when it landed on the moon. And it's pretty obvious that while there's discussion again as to whether the Earth is flat, that everything that we observe, I was even thinking about how foolish it is that when you and I look up into the sky, what shape is the moon? Our Earth, there's a picture. We live, in fact, we know this is true because we're told that the sphere of the Earth in the Scriptures, and we'll take the Word of God to be true and everyone else a liar. Then we take and we zoom in on our planet, and we find ourselves looking at the United States from an orbit, and there is presently 7.53 billion people running around all over this globe. And that's just mind-boggling as you think about all of those people. And then we just have our own little part of the Earth. And God knows. I don't even know how to begin to comprehend how He's able to know each of us. He's able to know the number of hairs that we have on our head. He knows everything about us. And yet our God does, because He's great and He's powerful and He's mighty and He is big. And then we zoom down a little bit closer and we get down to the state of Alabama. And here we zoom a little closer and we come on into Tuscumbia, Alabama. and we zoom a little closer, and now we're just coming right on down. And I don't know if you begin to recognize whose house that is, but as we just zoom on in, that's the best landlord that there ever was. She's not even here to know it. I looked at zooming in on the Fleming's house, and cute enough, the girls are small and standing out at the mailbox. I don't know if you've ever checked that, but you might look at what Google shows at the front of your house. Sabrina's in the car. You're checking the mail. God knows who lives in that house. That's Marilyn Caldwell's house. We shift over just a little bit, and we come over here to where we're sitting right now. And God knows who we are. Can you understand why David would say, "What is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him?" When you think about how large God must be, how powerful he must be, how mighty he must be, and yet he knows everything that's going on. I cannot wrap my brain around that. And it's very hard. The reality is, it's if not even impossible to comprehend just how great and how powerful God must be. Must be. So look over at Job chapter 9, our scripture reading. I want to look at some things that are said in Job chapter 9, which Dale has read for us. And while you're turning there, I want to say thank you to Dale. He is often overlooked. Chad and I would not be able to do what we're doing in teaching without Dale doing what he's doing. And I want to thank you. He's there when we're not in the high school class. And we appreciate very much what he does. And he read a scripture for us this morning there in Job chapter 9. And notice that one of the things that he says is there as he had read through from 4 to verse 10. It says in verse 7, he commands the sun and it does not rise. And I come back to the picture of the sun. The sun is 864,938 miles across in diameter. That's unbelievable. And yet, what did Job say? Job says there in verse 7, he commands the sun and it does not rise. To give you a better understanding of what we're talking about, you can fit 1.3 million Earth inside of the sun if it were to be hollow. And we just look at the sun and we see it and we don't see it each and every day, and yet it is God that controls that. Are there any passages that would teach us that God does cause the sun to rise? And let's look at a couple of passages. I want you to look over at Joshua chapter 10. It may have been a while since you've even looked at or considered a passage like this, but in Joshua chapter 10 and verse 12, we have the account where the sun stands still. I could go out there and I could all day long tell that sun to stop, and it won't stop. And yet in this particular occasion in Joshua chapter 10 and verse 12, then Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, "Sun, stand still over Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Ajalon." So the sun stood still and the moon stopped till the people had revenge upon their enemies. The sun actually stopped because God commanded it to stop. Joshua asked God and God made the sun stop. That's incredible. Do you remember over in 2 Kings chapter 20? 2 Kings chapter 20. Now again, as I'm turning over there, realize how large this ball of fire is. But it's under the control of a very, very powerful and mighty God. It's certainly something I have no control over. And as I started off in the lesson, I wanted to, in a very humble and feeble way, try to somehow get us to comprehend just how big God is and must be. So in 2 Kings chapter 20 there and in verse 8, the passage says, Hezekiah said to Isaiah, "What is the sign that the Lord will heal me and that I shall go up to the house of the Lord the third day?" You remember Hezekiah is sick. And Isaiah comes and says, "You need to get your house in order, you're going to die." Hezekiah rolls over and puts his face against the wall and he prays to God. And God grants him, Isaiah, before it's like he went, you picture him going down out of an apartment complex. And he gets to the ground floor and he's headed out the door. And God said, "Go back and tell Hezekiah I'm going to give him 15 more years." So Hezekiah says, what is the sign of the Lord will heal me and that I shall go up to the house of the Lord the third day? Then Isaiah said, this is the sign to you from the Lord that the Lord will do the thing which he has spoken. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees or go backward 10 degrees? What we're saying is, shall the sun go, shall it, in the sky, all of a sudden you're looking at the sun and all of a sudden it goes, whoop. And he says, shall it go forward or shall it go backward? Hezekiah answered, it's an easy thing for the shadow to go down. In other words, it normally goes this way. I guess I should be doing it this way. It normally goes, whoop. He says, let's make it go the other way. So now all of a sudden we see the sun go whoop, back into the sky. You like those sound effects? The Lord will do the thing which he has spoken. Hezekiah answered, is it an easy thing, verse 10, for the shadow to go down 10 degrees? No. But let the shadow go backward 10 degrees. So Isaiah the prophet cried out to the Lord, and he brought the shadow 10 degrees backward, by which it had gone down on the sundial of Ahaz. So I was curious about that, and I learned a little bit about sundials. Didn't know there was all that much to learn about sundials, but there's been some pretty good ones over the years. I saw a pretty good explanation as to the whole 10-degree thing and what kind of instruments they had, but here's an ancient sundial that they would actually be able to see and keep track of the sun. You know, they didn't have, I have a watch on to keep track of time, and they didn't have those kinds of things, but they did have a way of knowing the position of the earth. So here you have exactly what Job was talking about when he said, God commanded the sun, and it did exactly what God commands the sun to do. It rises, it goes down, and it's under the Lord's control. Go back to Job chapter 9, our text, Job chapter 9, and look with me at verse 9. Job chapter 9, and look with me there at verse 9. He says, and he made the bear. And we have a picture of this constellation. This is the big bear, Ursa Major. And I remember laying on that hay wagon in Indiana and Dad pointing up into the stars and trying to get me to see some of these constellations. You think about how they're there. People navigate, the ships have navigated by the constellations. And so in Job, it says he made the bear. God made all those stars. Not only that, but he made Orion. That's Orion the hunter. That is a picture of that, the formation of the stars there. And I remember always trying to, I always thought it was neat to try to see him, and I just have never had the ability to see. That looks pretty crude to me, but there's a lot to that the deeper you get. And it says God made that. And then he made Pleiades, which is a constellation of stars. And when you look, there's the Pleiades constellation of stars. But then Job says something interesting when he says that he made the chambers of the south. And I guess basically where Job was on the planet, he just didn't see any stars to the south. So it's kind of like a void. And that would be true, depending on where you're at on the globe as to what you can and cannot see as far as the stars. So where Job was, all he saw was an emptiness to his south. And so we see that God has created all of these things. And in his power, he made constellations of stars. And so it's extremely difficult to even comprehend how God has created all of this and how he controls all of that when I have hard time keeping my shoes tied, it seems. And yet God has all of these things under his control. Well, it's because he's great and he's powerful. In Job chapter 26 and verse 14, it says, indeed, these are the mere edges of his ways, and how small a whisper we hear of him, but the thunder of his power, who can understand? Can you comprehend all of that? I find it extremely difficult to comprehend much of any of how God does these things. Look over with me to Job chapter 28. Job chapter 28. And read with me verses 20 through 26. Job chapter 28, 20 to 26. From where then does wisdom come? Where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. We've heard a report about wisdom and understanding. God understands its way, and he knows its place. For he looks at the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heaven to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it, indeed. He searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and depart from evil is understanding. That sounds an awful lot like what the Ecclesiastes letter and how it ends. That the principal and primary thing is to fear God and to keep his commandments. So here's this picture of God understanding the way of wisdom. And I don't understand it, and that's right. And here's what I've been trying to do. The reason I cannot comprehend these things is because I'm too small. I am just so small in the scheme of things. And yet everything seems to revolve around me and my world. And yet I'm just a small speck in the scheme of all that God is in control of. And all that he sees and that he does. And notice in verse 28, to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. So from the Lord, here's what he declares. And to depart from evil is understanding. And so you cannot help but feel humble, I certainly do, in the presence of one who is so great and powerful. Because God has unlimited power and authority over man. That makes him God. And he's independent. He is sovereign of everyone and everything. Paul makes this point in Acts chapter 17 and verse 25, which is the passage that you have up here. And when he's in Athens and he sees all of their false gods, Paul makes this point in chapter 17 and verse 25. He says, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. This is not about what God needs from me. This is what I need from God. It's not about me. I am so small in the presence of such a large God. So he's not worshipped by men's hands as though he needs that, as he needs anything. But what he does is he does want that. He certainly is independent of it, but he wants that for us. And so here's what I'm trying to drive at right here is, if I fail to comprehend and I fail to appreciate God, who is so far above me and beyond me, you know what's going to happen? I will not trust him. I truly won't trust him. I won't fear him. I won't even worship him. I won't honor him in my life because he's not large enough in my life. A man or a woman who does not fear such a great and powerful God is not going to depend on him. He's not even in his thoughts. We looked at that the other day. God's not in his or her thoughts. He or she is going to depend upon himself or herself. And so in Psalm 10, the other passage that you have before you, in Psalm 10 and verse 4, he says, the wicked is proud in his proud countenance, does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. Psalm chapter 10 and in verse 4. God's not in that person's thoughts. Why? Because they don't even begin to understand how big God is. And when you understand how big and mighty and powerful he is, he's going to be a part of your life. You're going to want him to be a part of your life. Consider this. I'm going to read some passages for you. As I said, in a very small way, I'm trying to somehow elevate God. So I'm going to do that in this illustration. Watch the screen, and as I read these passages, just kind of follow along. This is where man tends to think. He starts with God doesn't exist, or God's my equal, or he's just the old man upstairs, or something of that nature. Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised, and his greatness is unsearchable. Psalm 145 and verse 3. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. His understanding is unsearchable. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 28. Yours, O Lord, is greatness, the power and the glory, the victory and the majesty, for all that is in heaven and in earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head over all things. You see, this is in reality how we have to view things within the recesses of our mind. God is great. He has unlimited power. And no, you cannot put him in a box and say something like, well, if God can do anything, can he make a rock that he can't pick so big that he can't pick it up? That's foolish talk. We're not to entertain such foolishness. You're not going to put God in a box or paint him into a corner. It's foolishness to even think that way. And when we think about God, he is wise. And what does that do to me? That makes me go from him being great to I am so little. He is so strong and powerful. I am so weak. He is wisdom. I am such a simple person when it comes to understanding the thoughts of God. What about Isaiah chapter 55 and verse 8 and 9? For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So just how do you wrap your mind around how great God is and how little we are? All of those scriptures are intended to do that. And then we come over to a passage like, heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool in Isaiah 66 and verse 1. What I want you to understand in this passage is please bear in mind, God is a spirit. He is not flesh. All this passage is trying to do is use earthly language that somehow I can comprehend what a foot is and a footstool. And that language is to make me consider the thought of heaven and all the vastness of it is his throne and the little round earth is his footstool. Now the problem with this picture I want you to realize is that's a gigantic foot pictured over just a very small part of landscape. If I knew how to draw, I would like to have some good pictures to try to illustrate some of these things. Because in reality, you need to have 2 feet planted right on top of earth. That doesn't do this justice. Because his foot would cover continents. You understand the imagery? And yet he's a spirit. How is God trying to get me to understand? His foot is so large that his foot would cover continents. Because our God is so big and we are so small. Would you come back with me to Job chapter 28? There's something that is found in this passage that I would like you to take note of as well. Back in Job chapter 28, one of the things that is said. In Job chapter 28, look at verse 26 again. In fact, I think I stopped short. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt. No, I did read that. He made a law for the rain. I've lived in Indiana. I've lived in Florida. I've lived in Wisconsin. I've lived in the state of Michigan. I've lived in the state of Virginia. And I've lived now in the state of Alabama. I've heard it forecast that it will not rain, and it rains. I've heard it forecast that it's going to rain and it doesn't rain. I've heard it forecast that it's not going to snow and it snows. And I've heard it forecast that it's not going to snow and it does snow. Now, if I mixed any of that up, I apologize. But I've heard it all. One time in Virginia, everything, because we had gotten burned. They didn't let the kids out of school. and a snowstorm came through about lunch. And they couldn't hardly get those kids home, and some of them didn't get home till like 6 or 7 o'clock at night because it was an ice storm. And when I went to get my kids, I spent most of the afternoon trying to get people up the hill that I needed to get up because they're sliding off the road, they're going into ditches. I remember one lady got to the top of the hill, and she's like, "What am I going to do?" And a man and I took and literally took our hand and did like this and pushed her car around and turned her around and said, "You probably got to go back down the hill. It slid that easy on the ice, and go down here and park and have somebody come and get you." The next time they said, "We're going to have a snow," they shut everything down. Everything closed. Everything. If you were supposed to have a worship, I think it was even over Sunday, everybody said, "Cross the screen, close, 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 close." We didn't get a single drop. Not a single snowflake. What's my point? God made a law for the rain. We need to worship God and honor Him for being God, the only true and living God, the only one who's even capable of understanding what that means. Because if we could control the rain, could you imagine that? "Director Cletus, can we turn the water off? It's getting too wet around here." Do you understand what I'm saying? If we controlled and had control, we don't know what we're doing. We try to introduce species back into some land, and we create a problem. Now they become a nuisance because we think they ought to be there. Things that are totally out of our realm of capable of even understanding. Can you imagine how thankful we are that we don't control the weather? Because man doesn't have the knowledge God does.